Okay, thank you. I'll look at that.
All right. Welcome to Tuesday night, everybody. I totally failed to gather any kind of announcements. If anyone has not heard, Domio is on sabbatical for the month of July, so we are lay-led for the next 4 Tuesdays, starting tonight. And I guess the only other announcement is book group on something like the 17th. So that should be about it for announcements. And I will go around and say names. Mick, Bob K, Ruth Ann, Alice, Gathel, Jeff, Jim, Jinryu, Karen, Katie, Linda R, Marv, Paula, Sabrina, and Tyler. And without further ado, I'll hand the mic to Mick.
Hey everybody. So we're gonna talk tonight, or we'll try to like do a little, it's almost like a, well, we'll all do a little bit of talking, hopefully. And what I want to maybe do is I want to try to get what we're gonna do, the Song of the Grass Hut, which is a poem by Sherdow, who lived from 700 to 790. And he's actually in our lineage, and so we, when we do our chant on Sunday of our lineage, which I think is chanting service A, we go all the way through it, and he's in there. He's one of the names, and it's a poem that he wrote. And it's actually a kind of a fun contrast poem to the Sondakai, the Harmony of Difference and Sameness, which is the Thursday night group that I'm sort of like, I don't want to say leading, but we get together on Thursday nights. We talk about that poem. It's a fun contrast to it because I feel like it's much more practical, the Song of the Grass Hut. So what we'll do, just to give you an idea of what tonight's going to look like, is we'll read it. I've got some slides to where we can kind of see the lines, and we'll just kind of talk about it. And I think we have maybe like 15 or 16 people, and I think it might be enough to avoid breakout rooms. So we'll try it. I don't know. It might be a mess, but whatever. But we're gonna do the first half tonight. We've got 2 Tuesday nights reserved. So this Tuesday and next week we'll do the second half of the poem. And hopefully we'll sort of like kind of, I don't know, find out what he's talking about, I guess. What I really love about the poetry in Zen is that it's so dense that I mean, we could spend all night talking about the first line if you wanted to, probably don't want to, but and so what I want to do is just kind of get a sense of a little bit of what's going on, but more importantly, and this is the important part, I want to understand what everyone else kind of can see in the poem. The poem has been around since 750. That's a really long time. And what I want to kind of find out is like, why? Why is it a big deal? And is it, in what way is it a big deal? And what I think is really important about that is trying to figure out what all of us collectively can kind of see in the poem. And to that extent, you as an individual is somebody who we really want to. It's important to get that input because it's going to help everyone else here kind of grasp what's happening in the poem and maybe help it resonate with them. And to me, that is the Sangha treasure. Like, you are the Sangha treasure for everyone else here. And so we want you to share, even if it's like, I don't know. I don't think this is relevant to me. Hopefully, you've got a reason that it's not relevant to you. And like, whatever you have to share, your perspective is what makes up the song a treasure. And that's kind of like what I want to get out of this night, is to kind of see whatever, what it looks like to everyone else. Okay, so we'll probably in the first bit, I'll read the whole thing. I've got some slides with the text of it up, and then we'll just sort of like open it up to maybe a couple of like question and answers. What you may want to do, and I'll give everybody a minute to do this, is you may want to get a pen and paper, because I think what I would like maybe the night to go on is in the first 20 or 30 minutes, we'll just sort of bounce around some ideas, and that might rattle something in your mind. And you say, oh man, that reminds me of this time or this, you know, thing that I did. Because what I would really like to do at the end of the evening is maybe have 2 or 3 minutes for everybody in the group to have some kind of a personal reflection on how a part of this poem speaks to an experience you had or something personal to you. And so it might be helpful to have a pen and paper if you hear something that resonates you, to just to jot it down, because we might come back to it later. So I'll give everybody maybe like just a little bit of time right now if you want to go grab one. It's definitely not required, but. All right, well, so I am a high school teacher, and when I do these discussion type things as a high school teacher, one of the first things that I do, and we did it on Thursday, so I'm sorry if this is a repeat for some people, is I wanna talk about some discussion norms. I wanna say first that I think one of the things that really draws me to this sangha, and one of the things that I love about the sangha, is I have always felt comfortable sharing personal details and sharing things about my own life and my experience. And I know that this is a safe place. But what I also know is just because it feels safe for me, doesn't mean it feels safe for everybody else. I know that everyone here follows these discussion norms, and I'm going to run through them in just a second. But I just want to let anybody who might not feel super comfortable, this is just a second for us to all recognize that we do follow these norms, and I want you to feel safe sharing in this space. And so what I would like to see from everybody is that we're engaged, we're gonna limit our distractors. I have had times where my phone is on the desk and it's definitely a distractor. I want everybody to communicate directly, and in particularly part of that communication is active and reflective listening. So if someone is speaking, we'll just give them everything that we can. And then we'll speak from the I perspective, because that is literally what we're all here for, is I want to hear your perspective. So when you do it, we'll speak from the I perspective. We'll give everybody some time and space. And then one of the last things that I do want to mention specifically, we do record these. And I think it's great that they record these, and I've actually gone back and watched a bunch of the recordings. If there's something that you want to share that is of a personal nature that you maybe don't want to be on the recording, you can simply message me in the chat. I can stop the recording, you can share, and we'll start the recording back up when you're done sharing. Or if it's something, you know, that happens after the fact and you're like, man, I'm not sure I want that recording to go up, we can fiddle it around and see if we can make sure that that goes. I want everybody to feel safe and comfortable sharing in this space. All right, let's see what else we got. That's a little, we did that earlier. This is Sherdo, who wrote our poem that we're about to do. He was one of our ancestors, and he's sort of here. This isn't super relevant. Okay. So what we'll do now is I'll read the poem. I actually have a link if you don't want to read my little PowerPoint. What I can do, give me just a second. I'm going to put a link to a website that has it in the chat. Haha, there's the chat. And if you want to have it up on your screen, you can either click the link, or you can just watch the PowerPoint that's on the screen. It's in two slides, so at some point I'm going to switch the slides. This is chanted in places. I'm not gonna chant it right now. We'll just read our way through it. So the Song of the Grassroot Hermitage. I've built a grass hut where there's nothing of value. After eating, I relax and enjoy a nap. When it was completed, fresh weeds appeared. Now it's been lived in, covered by weeds. The person in the hut lives here calmly, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. Places worldly people live, he doesn't live. Realms worldly people love, he doesn't love. Though the hut is small, it includes the entire world. In 10 square feet, an old man illumines forms and their nature. A great vehicle bodhisattva trusts without doubt. The middling or lowly can't help wondering, will this hush perish or not? Perishable or not, the original master is present, not dwelling in north or south, east or west. Firmly based on steadiness, it can't be surpassed. A shining window below the green pines. Jade palaces or vermilion towers can't compare with it. Just sitting with the head covered, all things are at rest. Thus, this mountain monk doesn't understand at all. Living here, he no longer works to get free. Who would proudly arrange seats trying to entice guests? Turn around the light to shine within, then just return. The vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. Meet the ancestral teachers, be familiar with their instruction. Bind grasses to build a hut, and don't give up. Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk innocent. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations, are only to free you from obstructions. If you want to know the undying person in the hut, don't separate from this skin bag here and now. Well, all right. So obviously there's a ton going on here. And what I kind of want to do is work through it and sort of talk about some of the poetic devices. But first, we're going to need a couple of brave volunteers. But what I wanted to ask you, and we'll try, let's try some just unmuting if you feel like it. If it gets a little hectic, we can do some virtual hand raising. But what I want to ask is like, okay, so maybe we'll talk about like, what does he mean by grass hut and all of this language? But the first thing that I want to get past is like, A, literally, what is happening in the poem? Like literally, what is it about? What is it describing? Not in like a metaphorical sense or like, what is it an allegory for? But literally what's happening? Because, and okay, let's just start with that. You can pick a piece. Because like there's a sort of a sequence of things, but let's start with the beginning. What's going on in the beginning? Maybe like the first, actually just this first four stanzas that's on the first slide. What's going on there?
I'll take a guess. I don't know if I'm right or not, but it just sounds like the person who built the hut has been there for a while. So passage of time, living simply without material goods.
Yes, Linda, thank you. That's excellent. Yeah, it's just like actually that's one of the things that I really like about this. You know, Sherdo is like one of the greatest like Zen masters in, you know, he's one of the top ones. And yet this, I mean, if it is about him, but he's just, it's just like an old guy living in a hut. It seems very simple. Does anybody else want to like feel like literally what's happening? Anybody else want to add to that? I think we'll probably do one more and then we'll talk a little bit about.
I think he's sitting zazen.
I like that. I like that, Alice. And we're going to get into that in just a minute. That's really good. I like that. He's sitting zazen. That's wonderful. Yeah. And so actually, so fun fact, Sherdo translates as stone head, I think. That's what they tell me. And so that's literally where he got his name. There was the non-monastery. That's this big monastery and he's the guy at it. And instead of living in the monastery, he went to a rock next door and built a grass hut on top of a rock and lived there. And that was his hermitage. And that's where he lived. And that's what he's famous for. Well, he's famous for many things, but this is one of the things. And this is him talking about it. So now what I want to ask, and we'll see if we can get two different people to chime in on this. It literally sounds like a dude who has said, I built a hut, like I eat a little bit, I take naps. He's describing sort of like his kind of like lifestyle and how it centers around where he lives. And my question to you that I want to answer before we move on, and we'll take maybe two answers, you can just unmute yourself, is the literal meaning of it important? Like is literally living in a hut and living in exactly this way, like 10 square feet hut, like, is that important to us? The literal piece of it, is it important?
I think it's important because I think it's, you could say it's important and it's not important. I think it's important because it's not easy to do. It is something we might in our cluttered lives aspire to do, fantasize about doing, but living with that degree of simplicity is not easy. It would present challenges of dealing with weather, uncomfortable weather conditions. The austerity of it seems magical and something we might aspire to, but the actual literally doing that would be a challenge for many people.
That's great. And so that's wonderful. Something that's not easy to do. I like that you mentioned it's not easy to do. That for sure, like if I'm looking at this literally, particularly if there's this great, beautiful monastery and there's all these monks that are gonna cook you dinner and do all this stuff for you, like electing to go and live on a rock with a grass hut around it is definitely something that's not easy to do. And I thank you for bringing that up. We'll do one more person about maybe like literally what's happening and is that important? Is Sherdo telling me to like go into my backyard and like build a grass hut and that's how I do it?
I like the literal meaning. So it's important to me. It's as important to me as your very first question, which is what is going on? I think there's a lot of, clearly, there's a lot of, I can't even think of the word, references to things that are different from what the words he's being chosen, a lot of Zen references, a lot of imagery that Westerners are not necessarily familiar with. And so to appreciate the depth of that, I have to know literally where we're starting. So that's why it's important to me.
That's excellent. And that's one of the things that makes these poems and koans as well, particularly difficult to kind of like channel in on is that there's so much sort of historical context and there's a bunch of stuff that, you know, this is poetry, and poetry in particular is going to draw on a lot of what a reader already understands and a lot of things like that. And to not have that context to write is very difficult. Thank you, Jean-Marie. Okay, that's excellent. And I'm really curious about that. I'm really curious about that because to me, this poem is sort of, in his best attempt to distill it, is Sherdo kind of like describing his practice. And I think that's important to me because I think that gets to the true nature of practice. Here's an expert practitioner, and this is what he's saying his practice is. And what I want to try to get into now is a little bit like, okay, so it's poetry and certain things can stand in for other things in poetry. And so what I want to maybe try is to hit on a couple of like symbols or poetic devices that we might see that might give us some of that depth that Jean-Marie was talking about. That really can maybe resonate, that make this a poem, right, that has existed for more than, what am I going to do my math wrong here, 2,000 years or so? Now 1,500 years? No, 1,300 years. I'm getting closer. So let's try to talk about some of the poetic devices in it. So he's built a grass hut where there's nothing of value. And what I want to maybe get into now is a little bit of like what Alice had mentioned. Let's presume then that the grass hut is a metaphor for Zazen. And every time you sit, you're building your grass hut. And so when we sit, when we're on our cushion, we're trying to clear the mind. We're trying to build our metaphorical grass hut. And the grass hut is that mind in Zazen. And the first thing that we see, well, first off, it's a grass hut. And I don't know about you. I live in a house made of wood, not a grass hut. And it's interesting because I know on some discriminative level, my house is not gonna stand forever. It's a wood house. It's gonna get knocked down. In my neighborhood, it'll get knocked down and somebody's gonna build a $2 million house. But my house is not permanent. But my house is, it's easy to think it's permanent. It's easy to think that it's mine. It's easy to think that it will last. And when I live in my house and I have this house as my own, it allows me to buy into that delusion of a fixed, permanent thing. This is my house and it will be here tomorrow and it will be here the next day. But if I lived in a grass hut, And when I sit, I try to engage my big mind, the sort of big mind that Shinryu Suzuki talks about. I think we're trying to understand impermanence. And the place that I live when I'm sitting in my Zazen is intimately close to impermanence. And it's a grass hut, because that if you get a stiff wind, your grass hut is going to blow down. And I think that's why we have a grass hut. And the second thing that I want to talk about, if we talk about this as Zazen, is that there's nothing of value in the grass hut. And so if we're going to take the grass hut to be the mind of Zazen, I want to see if anybody is brave enough to talk about what it means that there is nothing of value in our grass hut. And I'll take a second. You can just unmute and we'll just.
Well, continue. I don't want to deviate from where you're going, but I don't presume that this is about Zazen.
Ooh.
I presume it's about life. I think there are references to Zazen in it, and I think we can see where he's talking about meditation here, there, and other places. But I don't know that there's literally a grass hut. I think this is my life, and there's really nothing of value.
Can you speak to nothing of value in the context of this being life?
It's kind of, to the point you made about your own house, sooner or later, I'm not going to be here. Everything I think I have is not going to be here. And I can go further and say, sooner or later, nobody will remember me.
Yeah, it's, I like that. Go ahead, Alice.
Oh, sorry. I like that interpretation about it being your life. I think what's so great about this poem is that it's like it's got many different like magnifying layers, right? You can see it as an interpretation of Zazen. You can see it as an interpretation of your body. You can see it as an interpretation of your life or even your abode. And I think when he talks about that there's nothing of value, it's like, you know, desensationalizing the whatever it is, the body or the life or the, you know, like everyone sensationalizes their body. Oh, like I'm athletic, I'm tall or short or what have you. I got six fingers, you know, what have you. Or like, oh, I have a big palace or even sensationalizing Zazen, thinking that, oh, it's such special thing to do, you know, like I'm so special, look at me, you know, I'm meditating. But really, like, it's simplistic in nature. There's not very much embellishment over it, really.
That's wonderful. I really like that idea of sensationalizing the body. If the grass hut is my body, there's nothing in that. That's really, Tyler, you had something?
Yeah, I was saying, I was kind of thinking it, I think, having read it a few times, as Jinryu was saying that the grass hut was sort of, I built this life where there's nothing of value. I was thinking of like, you know, where I don't have any attachments, ownership to things. After eating, I relax and enjoy a nap. And I feel like I once read that nap is an often used device for Zazen or meditation instead. So by saying I take a nap, I do my Zazen or I meditate or whatever. And when that's done, like just new shit comes up or like fresh weeds like happen. You know, I thought it was cleared and then, oh, Zazen's done and I'm back and then fresh weeds. And now it's been a living, I don't know, I don't think I have a breakdown of everything, but that was sort of the first few lines, kind of what I was thinking about.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. I really like that idea of like fresh weeds appearing, and that's where we're headed. Thank you, Tyler. That's exactly it, right? When it was completed, fresh weeds appeared, and now it's been lived in, covered by weeds. And I'm gonna ask you a follow-up, Tyler, and I'm gonna challenge you just a little bit. What do you think? So in line three, we've got weeds that show up. And then in line four, he mentions the weeds again. Now it's been lived in, covered by weeds. Like what, why are we still talking about the weeds? Do you think? You just take a stab. If anybody wants to throw him a lifeline, you're welcome to that too.
Yeah, when it's completed, fresh weeds appear. Now it's been lived in, covered by weeds. I guess it's, is it saying something about like, weeds are gonna come, but at some point you got to let go of the weeding maybe, and you just sort of let it grow up and become part of the hut.
That's the way that I read it. He says like, look, this shit comes up, and you know what? Like, it just does come up. I don't need to fight it. I don't have to yank the weeds out. I don't have to make my world and my experience be exactly the way that I think it should be. Like, I don't know, shit comes up and I'm just gonna let it come up because this is my experience. And I think that I think that if we're talking about the grass hut as our life, and I really like that idea of it, because a lot of what he describes in the next couple of stanzas are going to be kind of like a lifestyle, and not just the place that he lives, but the way that he has built his life. And he's saying that, like, man, it changes constantly. There's stuff, and weeds are sort of traditionally these things that you got to get rid of. And like, I'm having all these thoughts, and I don't need to pluck them out and rip them out. They're just, they're there, and it comes up, and that's fine.
Go
ahead, Gethel, and then Shoketsu, you'll go after that.
Okay. Interpret is a little different, although I think there's probably many intended interpretations, but one of them is that the grass hut's the delusions we build in our lives. This is our life of delusion we're living in. And the weeds are delusions within delusions. And particularly when he comes down and says, perish or not, the original master is present. Our true self is present within the grass hut. I don't think that's all that's here, but that's one thread that's weaving through it.
Oh, that's wonderful. So the grass hut is delusions. And then now we have the delusions that we construct. I think that's important. And that's a really good, it's a really good point, Gathel. And then the weeds are the delusions within the delusions. That's great. Thank you, Gathel. Shoketsu, you've got your hand up.
Yeah, as I was writing my paper earlier, you know, last week, I came up across this line: wisdom consists of understanding that all of existence is emptiness, sunyata. And this is the foundation of all the paramitas. So I think the first line, I built a grass hut where there's nothing of value. I think that is the idea of sunyata, complete emptiness. Everything is empty. That's what came up for me.
Wow. That's beautiful. Thank you, Shoketsu. I like that. Where there's nothing of value because there's nothing. It's not there. Oh, that's wonderful.
Thank you.
Well, I think if anybody else wants to mention something about the first stanza, we'll give a couple seconds for that, but then we're going to kind of jump to the next one. Making pretty good progress here. All right, there's go ahead, Alice.
Weeds aren't bad.
I love that take. I actually really like that. I have a bunch of weeds in my yard, but you know what? It's interesting, like, because I have little weeds and they bloom and they're these like little white flowers. My kids think they're wonderful. I have a bunch of dandelions and my kids love the dandelions because no one has taught them that they're weeds and not flowers. And they, you know, they blow them and all this stuff. And I think that's wonderful. And I can't remember. Somebody had something about weeds in a book that they wrote. Maybe it was Lori. I cannot remember. But somebody had something about, you know, why are we saying this is a weed and this is a flower? I didn't mean to step on what you were saying, Alice. I just got super excited. I'll let you.
I interpret it as, like, you know, you can see in many ways. I'm sure the women in this group have heard that about wrinkles being the beauty of your life, so to speak. You know, the lessons that you've marked on your face. Or, you know, as a physical therapist, when I see arthritis in an x-ray, I don't think, oh my gosh, this guy's messed up. I think, oh, look at this guy who's lived and played baseball and, you know, picked up his kids one too many times. And, you know, so it's like kind of like, it's just markings is all.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, to me, the weeds are the challenges of life. And now that I've lived as long as I have, I'm covered by them. They're scars. They're marks, as Alice says, of everything I've been through. And remembrances.
All right. Well, let's jump in to the next bit. There's a really subtle shift that I like that comes in in the second stanza. And in the first stanza, he's talking about himself in the first person. And then in the second stanza, we've shifted and now we're talking in the third person and we're talking about the person. And I think what Sherdo wants us to do here is to remind ourselves that this idea of self is emptiness, and not to get stuck on me. And in particular, because what he's describing is his practice, the life that he has set up. And he, the person, is not necessarily an important part of that, which I thought was interesting. It's a subtle phrase in the same way that I'm trying to do this with my kids, but it's in the same way that, like, it makes a big difference, because if I'm talking to my kid and I say, man, I'm really angry. I'm really angry. I'm really angry because you did X, Y, Z. Or what I could say is I became angry. I got upset because of X, Y, and Z. And like, that's just subtle shift of like, you know, I'm in control. I allowed myself to get upset because of this, instead of being like, I am angry and it's because you did this. You know, it was like, this thing happened and I chose to be angry about it for whatever reason. And I think in the same way, subtly shifting that language kind of like shifts the focus just enough to kind of be a little disorienting. And I think that's kind of what we're looking at in the second stanza, because now we're talking about the person in the hut lives here calmly, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. Places worldly people live, he doesn't live. Realms worldly people love, he doesn't love. Katie, what's up? You've got your hand up.
Well, just, I like that. I think this might be my favorite line of the poem, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between.
What do you think is going on there?
He's, you know, in the hut, outside, or kind of standing in the door. I mean, he's just talking about life there and maybe if the hut's practice, he doesn't have to be in it to do it. He doesn't have to be maybe half in, half out. It just doesn't matter.
That's good. I think that's wonderful. I think the word stuck there is super important too, right? Because he's not like, I have to be inside, I have to be outside, I have to be sometimes inside and sometimes outside. You just are where you are sometimes. Yeah, Karen. There you go.
Yeah. As a message of acceptance, like just accepting where he is. And as far as the weeds, you know, in the stanza above, if those are his struggles, then he's not attaching to them. He's just letting his thoughts go, not attaching to any thoughts. And he's, you know, therefore just living very calmly. So to me, it's just a message about detaching and acceptance.
That's excellent. One of the, Jinryu mentioned a ton of context and all this other stuff. And I do want to bring something up. At this point there is, a Yogacara school of Buddhism, which sort of predates Sherdo. And so he would have studied this for sure. And one of the things that school, espoused, I guess, is mind only. There's only mind. So everything that you experience comes in through your mind and it's all inside. There's no phenomena. And to me, I think that he's sort of taking a shot to say, like, look, all of these philosophical schools that you're going to establish, that you have all of this stuff spelled out and it makes sense, and you've got your interdependent origination and all of this stuff. You don't have to get stuck to it. You don't have to get stuck to mind only or phenomena only or anything. You can't stick to it. Yes, Alice, you've got a hand up.
I like the stanza because it really brings in the power of now in here. So sticking to my original like view that this could be Zazen, I interpret this as not stuck to the inside, outside, or in between. Like when we're sitting Zazen, sometimes our mind wanders to the future, to the past, or to some kind of event or some kind of recording in your head of what happened. And then you kind of stay in that thought pattern for a while, like, oh, he said this or she said this, and haha, I felt good this time or whatever, you know, and then you suddenly snap out of it. You go, oh, I was following that thought pattern. And then, you know, there's like no daydreaming of living somewhere worldly or fantasizing or whatnot, but you're just, you know, living here presently, calmly. Rather than
that's wonderful
in some thought stream.
All right, we'll bring up one more thing and then we'll kind of try to do Jinryu, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I just wanted to be real quick. You know, this interpretation of not stuck to inside, outside, or in between, I don't know enough about the history and the dynasty, what was going on when he lived, but it could very well have to do, and you may have alluded to this, I'm not stuck to this view of Chan, I'm not stuck to that view of Chan, I'm not stuck to that school. The operative thing in that entire second stanza is I'm not stuck. And, you know, places where worldly people live and realms worldly people love, I'm not attached. I'm just here.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you. That's a wonderful segue. I want to do just one last line, and then we're gonna get into our personal reflection lounge because we are running out of time. Places worldly people live, he doesn't live. I just want to ask a quick question and we'll get maybe one response. Does that mean I'm in trouble? Because like I live in a place where I think we all live in a place where worldly people live. We do live there. Like, is that trouble for us? Does this mean we're doomed to not practice in the way that Sherdo practice?
I'll answer that. I don't think it means we're doomed. I think that refers to non-attachment, that one can live in the world that we live in, but not live there in the way of being highly attached.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Paul. That's where I was thinking we were going with that. Okay, so. All right, I'm going to try something a little new. I stole this format from another place. That's okay. And so what we'll do is we'll take, we have about, I think, 16 minutes left, and I think we have roughly 16 participants. That's perfect. And so what we'll do is we'll try to, in about a minute or so for each person, we'll go around and we'll just take a second and maybe reflect about some part of the poem. It doesn't even have to be part of the poem that we went over, how that might either be a reflection of your practice, I practice in this way, or it inspires me to practice, or it reminds me that this is a part of practice in some way that maybe you can relate to it personally. What I also want to do at this point, because I do want to go around and make sure everybody has a chance to participate. What we'll do is sort of the rule of participating or not, is if you don't feel comfortable like doing the personal reflection, that's totally fine. You just turn your camera off, and that'll be an indication that you still want to listen, you still want to be around for it, but maybe not necessarily participating in the sharing. So we'll give anybody who doesn't necessarily want to participate in the personal reflection, or if you didn't think of anything, or you're a little nervous about coming up with something, that's totally fine. You can just turn your camera off. I know that there were, I think, Sabrina and Marv and Ruthann. What we can do for you guys who have your camera off, if you want to share at any point, you just put your little digital hand up and we'll make sure that we get around to you. But I'll start, because I don't know, we'll just kind of see. But for me, the line that really resonated with me in the part that we've gone so far has been not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. I find that a lot of times in my parenting, I will like have an immediate reaction of like anger because my kid doesn't act a specific way. And I've spent a good amount of time trying to explore those feelings, like why do I get upset when my kid doesn't act a particular way? I want my kids to be who they are. And, you know, and if they're a kid who like draws on the wall in his room, like I can be calm about it. I can talk to him about it, but I don't want to control them. I don't want to get stuck on my kids should be X, Y, and Z. And I think it also gets to the line of places worldly people live, he doesn't live. You know, those are sort of like the society is telling me your kids should sit down in a restaurant and chew with their mouth closed and all this other stuff. And I get hung up on that. And I think that I really like that that's kind of calling me to like just take them for who they are. And then we'll just kind of like, you know, I can guide them, but I can't control them. And I think that reminds me a bit of that. So I'll go ahead and just do some, we'll just go around how everybody shows up on my screen. So we'll start with Alice, because you are right there on my screen.
The same line resonates to me, the not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. I get lost in my own narrative a lot, like my past or anxiety about the future or some event. And I replay it in my head when, you know, it's happened, right? It's happened. And just take it as is. Or, you know, really be present rather than in the future, in the past, or some in-between narrative. Being present really matters a whole lot. That's all.
Yeah, that's beautiful. As a person who has spent years telling myself how awesome I am, it is really hard not to stick to those narratives of like, oh, you remember that? You're so awesome. Yeah, I totally identify with that. Ruthann, we'll jump to you if you want to do some sharing.
Yes, thank you. I like to see in pictures, so just the picture of the grass hut to me is the simplicity, the impermanence, and the phrase, nothing of value. Nothing and value are the same, the nothingness, the emptiness. So I just hold that picture almost as a koan. Thanks.
Yeah, I really like that, Ruthann. I actually like, for the last little bit, I've been trying to think of my Zazen as a little like period of renunciation. You know, I'm going to sit Zazen and it doesn't matter about all my stuff and all the thoughts that I have. I'm just going to renounce it. I'm going to leave it. And for my 30 minutes, I'm just going to have it. I'm just going to be the simple grass hut. I love that. Thank you. Tyler, let's go with Tyler.
I haven't been able to decide what I'm, I guess I'm going to sit with now it's been lived in, covered by weeds. I like that imagery, I guess. I like the idea of the grass hut, despite the being nothing of value and could blow over in a stiff breeze or whatever, maybe built up stronger because of the weeds that are covering it, I guess. Yeah, that was sort of what I've been thinking about.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. Built up because of the weeds, just like a little bit like what Junior and Alice were saying, like, you know, we are the stuff that comes up in our lives, and it tells a story of us. That's beautiful. Paola, you are next on my screen.
I found two things resonated with me. Again, the weeds. Weeds are diversity in nature and in our lives. Our metaphoric weeds are diversities, and in nature, weeds are diversity. We need weeds, and they have a lot of nutrition. Weeds can have more nutrition than grasses do. And they also, as Tata was saying, they form a web, like their root system and the way they intertwine, they can make the grasshopper stronger. The other line that really resonated for me a lot were the last two. If you want to know the undying person in the grass hut, do not separate from the skin bag here and now. I think that means, to me, it means if you want to practice like this, then be in your body right now, the skin bag as it is, with all its sagginess that bags may have. So those are my thoughts.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I actually, I love the image that he has of like skin bag. One of the things that I do when I'm sitting and I notice that my mind has kind of gone all over the place, I just kind of, I breathe and I say, huh, what a funny bag of meat. Like I just, I think it's so interesting, that image. It's beautiful. Thank you, Paola. Karen, you are next on my screen.
This is my first time to see this tonight. And yeah, my first image that came up was like Thoreau on Walden Pond, just the simplicity of living life. And then the other comment I have, I too can get really kind of wigged out when people are not behaving the way that I would like them to. And so there's a phrase that probably a lot of you have heard of, that which is your current expectations are future resentments. So it's a really a good thing if you can let go of those expectations.
So. Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you, Karen. I know it is so easy to get stuck into those things. And it's so interesting the way that, how kind of like, to me, it goes really deep. Like it's really hard to kind of like pull those expectations out once they're kind of set. And it's just immediate, your reaction, because it's now defined by that expectation that you have set up. Thank you, Karen. Jinryu, you're up next. How do you relate to this?
Oh, I was unmuted. I hope I wasn't the one making that noise. Well, I think the first two stanzas that we went through to me are just a wonderful description of what our practice offers. I am partial to the term of not stuck. I think I had been at Bright Ways End maybe 5 or 6 months when I learned a teaching from Domio about being stuck. And it was in the group setting, and she said, you know, Jana, sometimes people are just stuck. And I knew right then and there, I did not want to be, and I'd never wanted to be. So that choice of words has meaning for me.
Thank you. You've used a couple of phrases in my time here that I have written down and remembered, and what our practice offers. I thought that is a beautiful phrase, because to me, that's what draws me to the poem. And that's kind of like why I love the simplicity of it, because he's talking about his life and like, this is what our practice offers. What a beautiful sentiment. Thank you, Jinryu. Linda, looks like you're up next. Got some personal relation.
Yeah, two lines that I really like that resonate with me and my thoughts this week. Though the hut is small, it includes the entire world. And then jade palaces or vermilion towers can't compare with it. So I've really been focusing on gratitude for what I have. I was laid off a year ago and my job's not going to be coming back, at least not to me, because there's a little bit of downsizing that has happened because of the pandemic. And, you know, I used to focus most of my energy and time on going to work. And now I'm home. My husband's working from home. I'm here with our pets. And so I'm just trying really to have gratitude for what's around me. And so when he refers to, though the hut is small and includes the entire world, that just really resonated with how I've been feeling about my my home, my husband, our pets. We don't have children. I have one brother. My parents are gone. You know, so this is my hut, you know, and nothing really is as important to me as that.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing. I'm sorry to hear about your job. It's so difficult because, you know, people identify, they put their identity into what they do. You know, it's one of the first questions you ask somebody when you meet them. Oh, what do you do? Because that's the big part, and having that taken away has got to be difficult. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, thank you.
Katie, what's up? What do you got? We're gonna try to shoot for that minute time frame. We maybe got three people left in 3 minutes.
Oh yeah, I'll be quick because I've kind of already said it, but that I really like that line about it doesn't matter whether inside, outside, or in between. But part of that I was thinking is just because of, it's like when you're camping and you've got a big tent, but it's like, there's no reason to be inside the tent. You could be outside the tent. You could be standing. It doesn't really matter because the tent is so simple. You know, there's just not that much difference between the three states. So that's something I was thinking.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Thank you, Katie. I know, I love it. Like, camping is to be out in nature, but you have a tent anyways. But the tent's not really the focus. Your tent's maybe there, maybe you go in when it's raining, but you're outside. It's beautiful. Jeff Young, see what you got, bud.
Well, thanks so much, Mick, for sharing this. I'll call it a poem. It's really beautiful and got me thinking. I'm gonna have to sit with this for a while and study it. But a line that stuck out to me is, perishable or not, the original master is present, not dwelling south, north, east, or west. And I find in this writing him moving back and forth from the literal to the absolute, even within in a sentence, you know, so he's bringing up that dilemma or that concern we all maybe have about us being perishable. And then he introduces, well, or not, you know, then speaks to maybe our original Buddha nature as being present. And it doesn't dwell in a particular location, moving back to that absolute. And that's helpful to me as I can get caught up in any moment of the day in what is literally right in front of me and think that is the entire universe. So this helps me move both inside and outside. So thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jeff. I love that about like trying to see our own Buddha nature. Like that's one of the other things that I love about that you need poems for. You need poems with their, you know, floral language and their allegories and their symbolism to kind of get a sense of it. And that's why I love studying these things. So thank you, Jeff. Mark, what you got?
Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk innocent. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations are only to free you from obstructions. I love that, you know, he writes this beautiful poem that will be preserved for millennia, and I can pick through it and say, okay, that means phenomena. That's a reference to there being no basis. This is a reference to the Vimalakirti Sutra. And at the end, he unfolds this great ease and reminds you that the words weren't the point. It reminds me of one of the things Dogen wrote when he came back from China was that he came back empty-handed. He just knew that his eyes were horizontal and his nose was vertical.
Yeah, that's what, you know, and I actually, so I'm a little, I love Dogen. I love him, but I feel like I have to take Dramamine before I read, because I'm just going to get just thrown around with all the words. And I actually like Sherdo, because I feel like Sherdo is like playing Pong. He's going to toss relative back to absolute, back to relative, back to absolute. And Dogen's like a washing machine. He's going to spin you in circles, and going in all those directions is like, woof, you got to prepare yourself for that. Thank you, Mark. That's wonderful. And then Bob K. Last one, Bob K.
Too much, not enough.
Beautiful. All at once, too much, not enough. Speaking of too much, not enough time. It's 12:02 a.m. where I am. I think that means it's 9 p.m. where you are. So I am not able to do the Lotus part of the closing first. So we'll just do.
Oh, we don't do that on Tuesday night anyway.
Oh, wonderful. Saved. I knew it. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you all so much. This was wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mick.
Thank you.
Go to sleep.
Good night.
Good night.